think I'm going to be in my 20s forever, right? With me all, but no, I'm like, get me out of here. Let's switch.
Yes,
let's
please.
Do freaky.
Yes.
What can we do?
I would love to.
We could, like, touch fingertips and maybe we'll switch.
I want to get to your point where I have it all figured out. I'm happy. I'm fulfilled.
It's going to be you.
No. Don't recommend it.
Right. Okay. I'm hot. My eyes are watering. I don't know what's happening here. Oh my word. I think it's talking about yourself. It gives you that anxiety.
All DeLulu besties, welcome. This is a safe space to vent, talk shit, reflect, and most importantly, keep it real. It's better to trauma dump here so that we don't explode on innocent randos. Just admit it. You're bothered.
What's up, DeLulu besties? Welcome back to another episode of Balancing the Bullshit. Today we've got Carrie Hemming Brown. You guys, I feel like I'm just taking y'all through a tour of my entire life. This has been my hairdresser since high school, and I still see her to this day. I love her. Carrie is a working hairstylist with over 25 years experience in the field of cosmetology. Carrie holds a Master of Science degree in clinical, industrial, and organizational psychology. She has held just about every position as a hairstylist, including an educator and stage artist, and understands the business and personal aspects of standing behind the chair. Her love of her industry is also a reflection of her mindful beliefs. She's the author of A Psychology of a Mindful Hairdresser, and this book is about so much more than just being a mindful hairdresser. It's applicable to anyone interested in leading a more productive life, a more positive and successful career, and learning to believe in yourself, love yourself, and accept yourself for who you are. So welcome, Carrie. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I'm very excited, and let's get started because I'm nervous.
So you state in the book that you love what you do every day, and your career as a licensed cosmetologist has fulfilled all of your professional goals and aspirations, which I can attest to that. You obviously are very good at what you do, but you really do love it, and you're always happy. You seem to have such a great life. So I have a few questions about that, because I think myself and a lot of my listeners, going through our 20s, no one ever warned me how hard our 20s is. I feel like people are like, oh, it's the best time of your life. No, it's so hard. It's so confusing. For the last at least 5 years, I've been like, I can't wait to get to my 30s. Like, I used to think those people seem older and boring, but I'm like, I just can't wait to have it figured out and for my life to not be on fire every day. And I know you started out in psychology, which is a very traditional, like, checking off the boxes is what my life coach calls it. I had to get away from checking off the boxes, doing what society tells you to do. You go to college, you get a degree, then you go to corporate life, then you find a husband, then you have kids, then you get a white picket fence. I was checking off all these boxes, and I just was getting more and more miserable and losing myself more. Did you ever experience that? Because I know you switched from psychology, which is very traditional, to then, like, something creative.
So, from a young age, I was fascinated with hair. My mom was this very elegant, when she dressed up, she always put rollers in her hair, and she went to the hair salon. And back then, the hair salon was like, you had 10 big hair dryers going, and the salons were super hot, and there was smoking, and perms, and it's different today than when I was a very young girl, and so it was fascinating to me seeing all of this art. Now when I look back, I think, wow, that was just the coolest, the dryers and the scissors and that. So my mom went to beauty school when she was older, and my sisters were young, and so I would break into their kits, and I would take out their scissors and their clippers and their curlers. And I would practice on my Barbies. And with my dolls, I would take markers and color their hair purple and shave their heads and all that stuff. And then I would put it all back in their kits and think that nobody knew I was doing this. So that was my foray into being a hairdresser. And then it just continued. It went from Barbie to my friends. And my mom was like, I think I need to teach you how to cut hair.
Because you're going
to
do it anyway.
Yeah. You're cutting everyone's hair. Just please don't start working with chemicals, which I did from a young age. I started coloring and perming. And psychology came to me after my first Psych 101 class. I was like, wow, perfect. That's cool. All the theorists, all the this and that.
That's fascinating.
It was so fascinating. And at that time, I was a young mom. My husband had just re-enlisted in the military, and we were going to move. And I panicked and said, what if I get somewhere and can't get hired as a hairdresser, or I don't have anyone to watch my kids? I set up these online classes, and I started to finish my psych degree. So that's how that started. And then I went into education for a couple of years. So I was doing both. Was
education in hair?
No. So let me, I'll give you a lot of background. But as a cosmetologist, I had a salon. I worked for a major hair care company. I was an educator. And I did all this as a young mom, a young hairdresser. And that's the life. That's what you strive for as a hairdresser. You want to be on your own, and you want to just fulfill your passion. But also as a married person, it was a dual thing. I've had my thing and done this for years, and my husband was in the military, and so it was time to go, time to move. And that's very shocking. So after all these years of having my own business, it was time to, I thought, I have to reinvent myself. Mm. So that is where I had this brief second career in education.
And was that fair because you had to let go of all your clients? So the word was restarting your book of business?
Yeah, I had to physically move from the state that I was born and grew up in and had my business. And at first it was exciting, but it was also a setback because I've given up this prominent career, and how am I going to start over again? Because you do have to build a clientele again. You have to, first off, find a place to work. Are you going to fit? Is this going to be your tribe? Are you going to be ostracized? You think about all those things. And for me, I may not seem like it, but I am more interested. All of that is so scary.
And putting yourself out there.
Yes, and fear stifles you so much.
Oh, yeah.
To get back on track, I got to get my family settled first, right? I got to get my family settled, got to get my kids settled, got to get them into their thing. And because I now have this background in psychology, I have this learning that I had built up from going to school. I said, I know what's going to happen in 6 months. I'm going to like fall apart because I've taken care of everybody else and I haven't taken care of myself. So that is what happened in 6 months. I was like a mess because, and I'm calling my mom from, she's in Alaska and I'm all the way down in Massachusetts. And I'm like, my world is falling apart. Life is just, it's hard. And she was like, I know, life is hard. Snap out of it. Yeah,
oh, sure.
That's it. That was her. And there's a lot more advice, of course, because I talk about my mom a lot, especially in my book.
Yeah.
The tough love and the tender love and all of that stuff. But man, no one ever tells you how hard it is to pick up and start over again, because that is really, really hard. And that was my mission, whether I knew it or not at that time. That was my mission, to just be okay and teach my kids how to be okay too, because they were doing the same thing. My husband was immersed in his work. He really had put on a brave face, whether he was suffering or not. I didn't know, but I'm sure he was. He was, of course he was. And my kids having to start all over again. So it was just
hard for everybody.
Yeah.
So then what made you decide to go into education? Did you think that would be easier to start in that versus cosmetology?
My kids were in bilingual schools, and I had volunteered for years in their schools. They're always in the back of my mind. I wanted to do hair. So I'm just sitting in my office or the classroom, and I'm trimming bangs.
Oh, really?
Yes. And something talking about makeup.
Cute.
Telling people, come on to my house, I'll color your hair, that kind of thing. Yeah, so wherever I went, it was still happening for me. And it never left, and that's how you know that's your true love. Really. You can't leave it behind, and you constantly pursue it no matter what you're doing. I'm working in a school, and I'm trimming bangs, and I'm braiding little kids' hair. The moms are great.
That's so cute.
Yeah. For little festivals and things, my first school was a bilingual Portuguese school.
Cool.
And so, yeah, we had a lot of Brazilian festivals. So we would have parades and dances and all that stuff. The moms would come in and they'd go, I don't know what to do with these outfits. I don't know how to help me style her hair. So together, we would be like putting their costumes together and braiding their hair. And I'm like cutting little bangs with baby scissors.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was cool.
See, it makes sense when my life could just be your authentic self, because then everywhere you go, it's going to follow you, like it's your personality, and it makes sense hearing it from you, but for my own life, I'm like, what does that mean?
And time flies.
Yeah.
You're in your 20s one day, and you're hot shit.
I don't know about that. Do you
know what I mean? Yeah. So in my 20s, you have your tribe, and I have this great group of women that I worked with in my salon, and we would go out and we would have our business cards flinging them everywhere. And
cute.
Yeah. And we did hair shows and we did fashion shows. And I also had a lot more time. Because once you don't have time to do all that, you have to start prioritizing.
So then what got you to leave education and go back to hairstyling?
We left Massachusetts. We did another tour in Colorado. And same thing was happening there. And it was really interesting. In Colorado, I just started writing for Yahoo. I applied for...
Like a blog writer?
Yes. A little bit different than a blog writer. I was writing articles for magazines to buy. So I was a ghostwriter.
Okay.
And I would go to hair shows and talk about what was happening. So I was like, I'm like an old G. I don't want to say I was doing all this stuff for it, but I was doing all this stuff. This is in the early 2000s at this point. And that reignited my passion. My passion to really want to be in it full time. I never thought that I would be almost 16, 17 years later doing it.
Wow.
Yeah, so there, and it hasn't always been a smooth road because it takes time. It definitely takes time to build a clientele, to nurture your clientele.
Yeah.
Especially
every time you move.
That's crazy.
I'm also really impressed that as a kid, you knew, or at least from what I've heard, it seems like you always knew you wanted to be a hairdresser or something along those lines. Because another thing I struggled in my 20s, I think a lot of other people have too, is the noise. There's so much noise around us telling us what we should be. Like, did you not ever get sidetracked with, maybe I'm interested in this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I was going to be a hairdresser or I was going to be a famous artist.
Do you have any opinions on having a creative outlet? Because I've heard that leads to helping you find your fulfillment. Even if you're not artistic, but just what's your opinion on it?
As who I am now, are you talking about who I am now telling you or who I was then?
Both.
Because then I was a little helter-skelter and I'd say, oh, I like to do this. And I like to do that. And what do you like to do? But now, I'm always saying, start a journal. I'm a big believer in outlining what your strengths, your weaknesses, what do you love? As part of a journaling experience, it may not be a traditional journal where you're writing in a diary and saying, today, dear journal, I did this. And I went out and I got mad at someone. That might not be your journal. It may be, you may turn it into a vision board. This journal may be page after page of what you love to do, the research behind that, how you're going to get to that place to do what you love. say you love to sew and you always dreamed of sewing for other people. You have this binder filled with fabrics and pictures and patterns and notes on why you love it so much. Why does this texture move you? That is that person's journal.
I actually like that advice to journal about it because it's a lot easier than to actually go out and try it. Like, we might have a thought, oh, maybe I want to do this, but it's a lot to go out and put it into action. So if you journal about it, go back and read your journal entries and yes. see what keeps coming up and what you wrote about one day and then you totally forgot. And then as you were saying, if you're able to fill up a journal with all the details behind it, then maybe take that into consideration and then go out and actually try that thing.
Most definitely. I'll just focus on this person that wants to sew or wants to be a fashion designer, right? So they have this journal that's maybe half filled. When you get to that point where you're brave enough to step out, talk to someone who's already designing. Mm-hmm. Talk to someone who has a little grassroots startup that they're making t-shirts or they're embroidering or they're actually making clothes and shadow them for a day or a couple of days and see if you really, at that point, really do it and ask a ton of questions. And that's intimidating in itself to step out of your comfort zone, go to a shop or call someone and say, hey, I'm interested in this industry as well. Can you give me some advice?
Yeah.
Most of the time, people will say yes. First, write it down. Look it up on the internet. Call shops or call these organizations and just involve yourself somehow. And that ignites that passion in you to want to push forward.
Okay. One thing I found really interesting in your book was you were listing out things that you like about being a hairdresser, and one of them was the financial freedom it gave you, which I found really interesting because I know you have to build out your book of business and that could be stressful. And I actually have a girlfriend who started out her career in hairdressing and that's all she complained about was how she didn't have money because she didn't have her book of business filled out.
Really?
But also knowing you, I think a lot of the fulfillment that you have just has to do with your personality and your perspective on life. So how does mindset and attitude influence one's ability to find joy and wealth in their career, in your opinion?
So to start out, it's hard when you're young and you are vulnerable to other people's opinions.
Mm.
And you may be a little self-conscious and you don't have that, all of that self-love. You don't have that built up in you yet to where you're strong enough to say no, to set boundaries. You're not jaded by the world yet, and you feel like there are people that are out for your best interest, and so you could get taken advantage of. And I did go through that a lot.
No, that's actually really good advice, especially for somebody in their 20s. I actually heard this in a podcast yesterday. Some famous model was talking about also her income, how it really is tied to your level of self-worth, and no one's just born confident. Like, you have to go through shit in order to then be able to stand up for yourself and set boundaries. And she was talking about how, I think she was 19 or 20, and this photographer reached out to her and was like, oh, I'll make your career, I'll make you famous. But she had to get naked, and then he touched her boob, so she wasn't comfortable with it, but she didn't know her worth yet, or and she wasn't really that confident. She was like, I guess this is what I have to do. She was in a vulnerable position. And then a few years later, the guy ended up exposing all her photos. Like, he sold them and wrote a book about her. So he made all this money off of her. And then that actually was detrimental to her career because that affects her image, and brands don't want to work with her, like luxury brands. So that just goes to show exactly what you were saying. Had she not been so vulnerable, had she known her self-worth and been like, no, I'm not doing this, a lot more money then comes after that because you've got to protect your image.
I think that in a world where we are chasing wealth, we forget that in order to gain the wealth, there's a lot of hills that you climb to get to that place.
Yeah. You know what's funny about your book? Yeah. What I was saying, wow, what do I have to do to become fulfilled in my career and just be happy like Carrie? Everything in your book was so simple and just coming back to the basics, all about mindfulness. And it was the simplest things like make your bed in the morning, be organized, use sticky notes if you have to, go on a walk, breathe fresh air. But when you're so sucked into your job and you're like, I gotta work hard, how am I gonna make money? People forget to do those simple things like drinking water, and it goes such a long way.
Thank you. It trial and error on my part, because you may look at me and think, she's together. She's got it all pulled together. And I am at a place now in my life where I feel like, yes, I really do, in comparison to maybe how I was at 25. And so when I first started out, I just winged it, really. I mean, I was excited and working hard, but there were so many other things on my mind. It was, am I going to find a boyfriend? Or
girlfriend.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or am I going to ever move out of my parents' house and be independent? Am I going to buy a car? Am I going to do this? I went through a lot of setbacks to achieve where I'm at now. And I will say where I'm at now is a large partnership between my husband and I.
Aww.
That let me get to this place, because it wasn't easy. And I think I said it in my book, totally a self-sabotager for a long time.
Yeah.
And you have to recognize those things. Mindfulness resonates with hairdressers, because mindfulness is about paying attention in the moment and really changing behaviors for the better. I mean, that is mindfulness. And being mindful stems all the way back to like 400 BC, really. We first accounts of mindfulness were in the temples of Buddha. But the idea came about from meditating on positive and not negative, and purging thoughts and behaviors that weigh you down. So when I talk about introducing healthy behaviors, if you don't have healthy behaviors already, introducing them into your life, immediate changes. And so that's mindfulness, is paying attention and being present for yourself, present for others.
The way I would describe it, just to add on a little bit, it's almost like shedding off all the conditioning patterns that society, your culture, religion has placed on you. Because in order to be present, you have to let go of all the thoughts that are coming through your head, because they're all opinions, the way that you perceive the world, their judgment. So when you truly are mindful in the present moment, whatever's happening, it's almost like you don't have an opinion. You're just witnessing it, and then you're just aware of it without all the thoughts that you usually had behind it.
And it's okay. It's okay to have that. When you were saying shedding all of these things, you do shed doubt, and you shed fears and the weight of judgments, right?
Yeah.
But it's liberating. Also, we're not trying to erase our past. Those memories, those experiences, whether they were good or bad, those experiences make you who you are. So you have to take those into account. So mindfulness is about understanding why these events, why this learning took place in the first place, and how can you change it so that you're no longer speaking it into the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how can you change that? And you can change it little by little. Sometimes it takes a long time. It's not going to be overnight. We can be more disciplined, and we can make immediate changes today if we wanted to, by just adopting one small thing. And in my book, I talk about making a bed, and that just seems so ridiculous. How can making a bed change your life? It can, because you are committing to doing something. You're committing to making your bed, right? To me, that is a starting point, making your bed, or just getting up in the morning early enough to where you're paying attention to your personal hygiene, you're showering, you're brushing your teeth, you're flossing, you're doing all of you're getting prepared. Even if you're not going to do anything for the rest of the day, you're still ready to do something. You're ready to be part of the world. So modern mindfulness is 12-step programs. When someone is in alcohol recovery or drug recovery, you will often attend group, individual or group counseling. But you'll start with, what's your day like? What is your morning like? Do you eat? Do you sleep all day? Are you depressed? Do you have to go to work? And when you're going to work, are you ready for work? Are you just, now that you've committed to being drug and alcohol free, how are you moving forward? Because in the past, you were drunk or you were high. And so you probably weren't taking a bath. You probably weren't making your bed. You probably weren't eating. You probably weren't doing all the necessities that you need to do to be part of a productive society, right? Mindfulness stems from a place within yourself that you become more disciplined. So you can apply it in so many different ways in your life. It doesn't have to be one set schedule.
Going back to how I asked you how to make money and find a fulfilling career, right. I think it starts with these basic things. Like, it's so easy to just get out of bed and not make it, but it is the little things that make you disciplined. It creates your behavior and then how you show up in the world. Like, making money and being fulfilled, I think, is actually a lot simpler than people realize.
And like you said, we bring all of these conditions that we've grown up with from the time we were little kids to what we've observed in society. And we bombard ourselves with all of these conditions. And that in itself stifles people. You have to be strong enough to be able to shake it off. It can be very cloudy, especially the older you get, the more baggage you have around you.
Okay, you include it in the book. Don't let negative and toxic people rent space in your head, raise the rent, and kick them out.
Yes, most
definitely. Which I fully agree. But when you are in that moment where you are being mistreated, especially coming from someone in my 20s, I had these moments all the time where I wouldn't agree with the systems or the way things were being ran in my jobs. But who am I? The way that I would see it is, okay, I could either walk away because my values are not aligning with the way that this company's being ran, but they're also paying my bills. So I gave away my power to the company because I was like, well, I need money, I gotta pay my bills.
Right.
But what advice do you have for actually putting that quote into action when you are in those tough moments?
When you're vulnerable?
Yep.
If you're having a moment where you're feeling sad or depressed, or you're looking at your life and saying, I haven't amounted to anything. We have pity parties for ourselves. You feel like you're digging a hole. You want to climb in it and cover yourself up, right? Yep. You have to figure out a way to kick those thoughts out of your head. If it's a toxic person, you've got to find a way to distance yourself from that toxic person. If that toxic person is your boss, which it is for many people, you're now changing your behaviors to satisfy this individual. First of all, let me say other people causing you stress. The thought in psychology is that we're responsible for our own emotions, our thoughts, our emotions and our behaviors. We are responsible for that. So we can't blame somebody and say, yeah, I went out and slammed my car into your car because you made me do it. No, you did it. So it's recognizing why that space is being taken up and then work on it. And if you're not strong enough to work on it for yourself, you need a partner. You need to either talk to someone you're close to, talk to a counselor, read a book, and start working on these things that will help you basically kick that shit out.
And I think it goes back to the simplicity of being mindful, the little things like doing your bed, being disciplined, just from personal experience. Everything on the outside is a reflection of what's going on internally. So I know when I was in those situations where I was like, okay, I can't necessarily just walk away because I need a paycheck, but I'm also then compromising on my values, how I'm being treated by a boss. That wasn't the only area of my life where I was giving away my power. Okay, you can't walk away from your boss. Find the other area in your life where you can walk away and start, like Zig Ziglar said, raise the rent, raise your standards and stand by them. Because it's little things like doing your bed every day, little baby steps of practicing this in other areas of your life will then prepare you and train you for that big moment where you do have to walk away from your boss.
Right. You are building that strength up so that you can stand on your own two feet. And oftentimes when you're so mentally bogged down, you can't see through the mist. Yeah. And we do get caught up with ourselves too, and that feeling sometimes feels good at first.
I'm depressed. Pity parties are fun.
And self-preservation. If we can point out anything else but ourselves to work on, right?
Yeah.
Oftentimes it's our own self that we work on last.
Which is when you end up giving your power away.
So that interpretation, Zig Ziglar's interpretation, could be many things. In my head, I picture like a loft, and this loft is just filled with, one corner is regret, one corner is past people in my life, another one is present day stressors, right? But if I am still looking at this, I'm not moving forward. And after years and years, if I still have these underlying feelings that I haven't worked through, they're holding me back. It's those kinds of thoughts that you need to kick out. And if it's about an individual, a toxic individual in your life, you have to find a way to really remove yourself. Easier said than done. But that's what makes the biggest changes.
That's what'll get you out of the vulnerable place, because once you get out, it is hard to get out, but then you look back and go, oh, I am capable of taking responsibility for my life, standing up for myself. Right. And then the more you do it, the little baby steps, eventually you get to the place where you're not vulnerable anymore and you are able to stick by your standards and not compromise anymore.
Right. And that's such a big feeling when you get to that place, when you can pat yourself on the back and say, you know what? I did it for myself. And even if you had help, even if you worked it out with a counselor, worked it out with a friend, a parent, you still did it. And you should be really proud of yourself for moving forward. It's not easy, but
it's worth it.
Right.
And I think it takes practice. And this just reminded me of another hard lesson I had to learn in my 20s, was taking radical responsibility, whether I thought it was my fault or not. But I think that was the process for me to become empowered and not be so vulnerable anymore. And the other day, my mom and I were talking about this one teacher from high school, and she was like, oh, yep, she's one of the teachers that called because you were a little chattermouth, always getting in trouble. And I was like, yeah, maybe I was the problem, or maybe they were just too boring and I didn't care what they had to teach me. Which, okay, yes, I do take responsibility. Like, I can probably shut my mouth a little bit. But that's an example of, because I've had a lot of those experiences now in my career where I'm like, okay, I would either blame the other person and, again, give away my power and complain about how they're not behaving the way that I want them to in order for it to work for my life, or I could take that as an opportunity to grow. And mom was like, you know what, that's true. That's one of the reasons why the education system is so far behind. That's a little example of how they could have taken responsibility and looked, okay, things have changed. We're not engaging with our students enough. What can we do to get them to be more engaged to actually learn so that they're not having to entertain themselves? And then that's how you move forward and progress. But instead, they wanted to point the finger, which, again, I get it, but that's just an example of taking radical responsibility, no matter whose fault you think it is. It's always an opportunity for growth if you decide to take it on.
Right. Yeah.
How can practicing self-love and self-care contribute to maintaining healthy boundaries with negative individuals?
paying attention to what your mind and body are saying if some kind of stressor's in our lives, and oftentimes we ignore it. And if you ignore it for too long, and it can be mental health stress, it can be physical stress, stressors coming from all corners. The candle at both ends. And so what that is, you're not resting, you're not eating properly, all of those things that we have talked about with your physical and mental presence, right? But that's so important. Self-care, self-love, they're really pretty much the same. If you're not taking time out to take care of yourself mentally and physically and your surroundings, then everything is out of order in your life. It's really important to take spa days, and you can take a spa day in your own house. Meditate. I detail meditation in the book, how you just take 5 minutes. You can meditate for 5 minutes, and you can meditate anywhere, really.
Yeah.
And just deep breathe and think about things that calm you, make you happy. It's really good, not just for your internal self, but it helps your muscles and your nervous system to just take a few minutes, calm yourself, think of the beach or a pleasant experience that you had, and you want to revolve that in your mind for those 5 minutes. And it's amazing how that works.
Yeah.
And that's the simplest form
of
self-love, right? Being around happy people, right? Doing things that fulfill your soul. And it may not be what everyone else does. Maybe you're going to go and listen to your favorite band and do more of that. Do things that aren't going to stress you out financially. Go to a park.
Yeah.
Read books, take a bath, just things that you have to do that. You have to wind down, and you have to do things that energize your soul.
It is crazy how when you take care of yourself that way, then everything else just takes care of itself.
And you become a magnet, because other people look at you and say, "What are you doing? You look fantastic."
Yeah.
You look fantastic. You sound fantastic.
You know, that's when you start to repel, like the easiest way to put it, you'll repel anything negative that's going to tear your life apart. Because like when you're in your 20s going out to bars all the time, you're going to become boring to people who are busy partying. They're going to be like, "Ew, I don't want to go to the park. I don't want to read a book." And then you start to attract more positive things. And as boring as it seems to leave the bar to go to a park and get fresh air and read a book to nourish your mind and soul, that really is like what's going to take care of you versus shoving alcohol down your body.
And I know that a bar is it's a social atmosphere. And it's not just 20s. It's not just people in their 20s that seek out that kind of communion, because that's really what it is, right? You're going there to... For whatever reason, it could be to drink, it could be to meet someone, it could be to join up with your tribe. Still seek out those basic needs. I think companionship. And it may not be romantic companionship. It's just finding people that you have a tribe with. And it may be just an encounter with someone you sit and talk to for a short period of time, but you're like, "Oh my gosh, that person gets me."
Yeah.
There's others out there like that.
Yeah. Which is so important, because then I think it grounds you and centers you. Like, you don't feel so alone. And then it gives you more confidence to then stand for your values, raise your standards. Yeah. Do you have any specific examples of a time where you had to raise the rent in your life and kick somebody out?
Ooh, I'm old, so I got lots of those. I think I told you before, I am not a self-saboteur like I used to be. So,
and I guess that I'm asking, tell me about a time when you self-sabotaged.
But that's it, really. Yeah. In my younger days, I was really good about doing that to myself. And it could have been an individual in my life that I kept in my life for my own selfish reasons. And I do feel like we do hold on to things for our own selfish reasons, whatever it is. Maybe it's a person. We're not really ready to get rid of that person in our life. We're not ready to kick them out. We still want to ruminate on their presence. We want to keep them in our lives. We really don't. But we're not ready at that moment. And some people aren't ever ready. And that's the thing. They don't know how to break that cycle. And oftentimes that cycle could be abuse of some type, whether it's physical or mental. But it could also be realizing that maybe we need extra help to be able to kick that situation out of our heads, right?
Yeah.
No longer willing to allow this to stay in there any longer. But again, you have to come to that conclusion. And you have to come to that conclusion yourself. But sometimes you need help getting to that place. And you said, have I had those moments? I've had those moments so many times where I needed to evict a renter from my head. I'm a young learner. I need to learn things. It just doesn't come naturally to me. I have to learn how to do it. I have to learn how to kick something out.
I don't think it comes natural to anyone.
Well, I don't know. Some people are just, like, you look at them, you go, oh, they're an old soul.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
They've been around here a long time. They've done it so many times. Do you ever think that about someone? They just got it together.
Right? I thought that about one sales director, but then I found out he was autistic. Like, slightly autistic.
Okay.
So he lacked compassion, but it was so easy for him to just pick people out and not feel bad about it or just be so brutal in order to get a sale and just tell people straight up. It was fascinating to watch.
So he didn't have that empathy.
No.
Yet. I do believe that people who are more empathic have a harder time kicking the junk out.
Yeah.
We hold on to it. And I don't know if we hold on to it because we're such emotional beings. If you ask family members about me, they might say just the opposite. They may say, oh no, she's really to the point and she'll, if she doesn't like it, she'll tell you. But I had to learn to get to that place to establish boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think when I was younger, I didn't have any boundaries. Mm-hmm. I always say I was like a wild wolf child running around.
Yep.
Adopting knowledge as it came to me.
So I was like, yeah, maybe I'll do that.
Sounds good.
Familiar.
So coming to a place where I write a book about ways to be, how to infuse mindfulness into your life, is really because I have this compilation of life experience.
Yeah.
I'm not telling anyone, here, dude, this will change your life. But I want to say, try it and see if it makes changes in your life. Because advice is one of those things that you can give someone advice. But if they shake their head and say, oh, that's great. Yes, I agree. And they don't even take bits and pieces of it and use it. It's just empty words that float around out there. But we cannot experience life for other people.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing, right? Even though we wish we could. Some of my 20s and 30s and 40s, right? I wish I could insert someone else in there and make decisions for me, or experience certain things, right?
Oh, yes.
But I am who I am today, I think, because of those, right?
Yeah.
Those experiences and challenges. And I learned from it, and I learned what I want in my life and what I don't want in my life.
I think that's amazing advice.
Is it?
Yeah, because all the time I'll meet with my life coach, and I'll be like, oh, you did tell me to do this like a year ago, and I think I'm just now doing it. I vaguely remember. So it doesn't matter. You could tell somebody, but until they're ready to hear it, or like you said, you have to experience it on your own in order to truly understand what they were saying. So I think that's amazing advice, because a lot of times I'll get hard on myself. Like, why don't I already know this? But just trying to remember in the hard times, you have to experience it. There's no other way that you're going to learn.
Listen up, DeLulu besties. If you want to learn all about manifesting and become a master at attracting anything you want in your life, check out my virtual manifesting masterclass, www.karen-rico.com/shop, or click in the link in the show notes. And if you want to watch me podcast every week, check out my YouTube channel at Balancing the Bullshit, or click on the link in the show notes.